to the relaunch of the Software Quality Podcast. My name is Randy Rice. Thanks for joining me today. As you know, I've been on hiatus for a couple of years, and people have requested that I resume these for whatever reason. So here we go. I'm going to give it a shot. Hopefully in the near future, we'll have some guests that we'll interview, and you'll get some of their wisdom, more so than mine. Quite a few things have happened. I'm not going to give you a huge amount of information there, but you'll notice that we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it. You can find me out there to connect with me, interact, and tell me what you're thinking about software quality, any questions that you have, and you can also find out what's new with Rice Consulting and some of the things we're doing. I just recently launched a new class for cloud testing, and soon we'll have that in e-learning version as well. We're going to be doing three public classes on foundation-level testing for ISTQB certification, one in Austin in March, another in Huntsville in April, and Salt Lake City in May. So check the website, riceconsulting.com, for information about those events. And we're also going to be doing a couple of advanced events for the advanced test analyst for ISTQB certification, one in Oklahoma City in March, and one in Newark, New Jersey in July, I believe. So, and a couple of Rome classes thrown into the mix. So if you want to go to Rome, or if you're in Rome or in Europe and want to go to those, I would love to see you there. The one is on testing dirty systems or complex undocumented legacy systems, as we're advertising it there. By the way, that book has come out since the podcast kind of went on hiatus last time. The Testing Dirty Systems book you can find on Amazon.com. Bill Perry and myself wrote that. The other class we're doing in Rome is on software test automation. Okay, so you know, I like to talk about software quality issues in the news. I'm just going to go into one. Some of you may have heard, many of you probably have heard, about the hotel room key failure over New Year's in Denver. Kind of an interesting story. I'm calling it Y2K plus 12. Because at midnight exactly on New Year's Eve, the card key software at the Denver Marriott Tech Center failed. And the result was a lot of people got locked out of their rooms, and apparently quite a bit of chaos ensued after that, to the point that they had to call the police out. I don't know that the police have ever been called out to a disturbance caused by software before, software defects. It'd be kind of interesting to see that. But some assaults took place, some public actions, which we won't go into on the podcast. But anyway, the hotel management admitted that the issue caused significant inconveniences and that all guests would be refunded for their room charge and taxes for Saturday night. Now, I think it's kind of interesting. I would love to see the root cause analysis on this one, but it appeared to be an isolated incident for this one Marriott there in Denver. So if we have any updates on that a little bit later, I will be sure and let you know about those. Now, the main topic I want to talk about in this podcast is the topic that I'm going to get into in the newsletter I plan to send out in a couple of days. It's going to be the feature article there called Killer Weeds. And I thought I would go into this because it all happened because one night I was listening to a Coast to Coast AM radio interview. They were talking about genetically modified crops. And during the conversation there, the guest mentioned that farmers were starting to see what they were calling killer weeds. These are the weeds that are so resilient to herbicides, or herbicides, however you want to say that, that it makes them very difficult to control or eradicate. Now, being the tester that I am, I immediately thought of the pesticide paradox that Boris Beiser wrote about in the 1980s in his book Software Testing Techniques. That principle says that, you know, just like bugs become resilient over time to pesticides, software defects can be almost resilient to our tests. Or another way to say that is software tests can become ineffective at finding new defects. Another way you'll typically hear this expressed is that your test will grow weaker over time in terms of finding new defects. Now, the way I tend to sometimes say this is that when you repeat tests over and over with the same conditions and the same data, those tests will become more confirmatory in nature than being discovery-oriented. Now, this can be kind of good news, bad news, because if your goal is to find new defects, then you'll find that you're going to have to keep refreshing and adding new tests. The good news side is that if you want to make sure that your software is still working correctly, no regression kind of defects and so forth, then you want to be able to repeat your test and go over those. And that way you pick up when things that used to work no longer work. So that's the idea of the confirmatory nature of these kinds of tests. Now, there's also the minefield example that I think James Bach talks about, in that, you know, the safest way to cross a minefield is to walk in the footsteps of someone who has been successful in previously crossing from one side of the minefield to the next. So if we equate a software defect as a mine, if we go down the proven paths, we don't hit the mines. Now, as testers, we kind of have this opposite goal, don't we? I say that failure is not an option, it's an objective. So this whole discussion about killer weeds got me thinking about some of the relationship with software testing and some of the killer defects that we deal with. Now, these defects may actually kill people, but when I say killer defects, I'm talking about those defects that are extremely difficult to find, or they keep popping up, and no matter how hard we test or how much we test, we still have defects. And by the way, I get that question quite a bit. People will call me looking for help in testing, which I'm glad to give. But they'll say things like, we do a lot of testing, but we still have defects. And so I have to then ask, well, what do you mean by a lot of testing? Is it that a lot of people do testing, or you test for a long time? And when we get down to it, basically what we learn is that the tests are weak. So with that thought in mind, let's look at a few things, similarities between weeds and defects, and what we can learn from those as testers. The first thing is that weeds are ubiquitous. Now, you know, they're everywhere. And I say in my article that I don't have a green thumb. I have a killer thumb. Plants and I just don't get along that well. Now, I can grow some things like tomatoes here in Oklahoma, but our climate is really harsh. I mean, even the weather equipment breaks here. We go from so cold to so hot. We can go sub-zero in the winter, 110 plus in the summer. And so it's really, really hard to grow things. You have to find just the right season, just the right time. So really the main things I can grow in Oklahoma are grass and weeds. And when I say grass, I'm not talking about marijuana. I'm just talking about Bermuda, okay? So, you know, but really I have no problem with growing weeds. And have you ever really noticed how resilient weeds are? I mean, they even grow in the cracks of a sidewalk. I've even seen them grow in the middle of a rock. And in a similar nature, software defects are everywhere too. Now, those of us in the weed control business of software, that's being testers, we have an abundant supply of defects to find. But just like the killer weeds, it seems that no matter how often we spray or pull or mow, those weeds still return. And even when you pull the weeds out by the roots, they still return because the seeds from your neighbors, and sometimes my own yard, they will float into the yard or the garden or the flower bed or whatever. And before, there they are again. In fact, just yesterday I was noticing, here we are in January in Oklahoma. Every bit of vegetation in my flower bed is dead except, guess what? The weeds. I saw two or three dark green weeds here when everything else is dead. So the question that we need to really ask are, you know, just like the seeds that can come into our yard and create real weeds, what are the seeds of your defects and where do they originate? Are they from inadequate requirements or bad code or bad coding techniques or bad coding habits? Perhaps inadequate testing. Well, the good news is that in software development, we can actually control the seeds of defects at their source. Now, it's not always easy, though. In fact, it hardly ever is easy. Which leads me to the next point, that weed control is maintenance. I really wish, and believe me, I really, really, really wish, I could just spray or treat for weeds once a year, but it just doesn't work that way. Once again, in Oklahoma last summer, we had 63 days that were 100 degrees or more. Plus, we were in a very severe drought. In fact, I didn't even know that there were levels of drought like severe and very severe. I thought severe was bad enough, but we were in what they called a very severe drought. And then after that, most of the vegetation died and then caught on fire. And at that point, I told people, welcome to hell. You know, you're here in Oklahoma. But I looked one day at the yard next to me, a vacant lot. Every blade of grass, every bit of grass in that yard was brown. It was dead. In fact, there were inch-wide cracks in the clay soil that basically that soil had the same consistency of bricks because it was made out of clay. But there, right in the middle of the lot, were green weeds. Even in the middle of soil as hard as bricks, with no water and 110 degree heat, the weeds survived. So have you ever asked why, despite all your testing and other things that you do, the defects seem to occur? Well, the best answer I've been able to come up with are that people are human, and humans make mistakes. They can be mistakes of misinterpretation of needs, perhaps incorrect implementation of solutions, or just common forgetfulness. But another reason for mistakes may be the rate and nature of change. You know, the faster we go, the easier it is to forget something or simply to become careless. Well, the number one thing I hear from testers, that is, I told you earlier about the question that I get often is that we do a lot of tests, but we still have defects. The number one complaint I hear from testers, though, is about having to maintain their test, which really causes me to ask, how did this false expectation start that says that tests are ever supposed to be maintenance-free? The fact is that most tests will require maintenance, just like the software we're testing. The thing, though, that I think that makes it a little bit different from the testing standpoint is that just changing one small item, like, say, one line of code, it can require changes to hundreds of tests, or maybe even thousands of tests or more. Now, some say this is why agile testing is great, and I agree that agile approaches help quite a bit in dealing with change. However, even in agile, there's tests that you still want to remember and repeat. And yes, these may be automated, but that really doesn't matter in terms of maintenance, since changes ripple through automated tests as well as manual ones. Well, another thing we need to know here is that timing is critical. Since I am horticulturally challenged, and I admit it, I hire my friend Marty, who's a professional lawn treater, a lawn man, to come and spray and fertilize my yard, and he does that about 5 times a year. And the last spraying of the year, which is late fall, and the first spraying in early spring are pre-emergent treatments. Now, these treatments are very important to kill the weeds while they're still in the seed stage. If you don't catch those weeds early, then you're playing catch-up for the rest of the year. So we have a similar thing in software projects. As most of us know as testers, early testing is good. You know, test early and test often, right? Well, early defect prevention and detection methods are key to stopping defects before they bloom and become larger and nastier. Things like reviews, walkthroughs, inspections can be your pre-emergent detection of defects. Well, the final thing I want to just talk about for just a second is knowing your weeds. Now, Marty, he doesn't spray for all the possible weeds in my yard. Instead, he sprays for those weeds that are common to our area, and if some rogue weeds happen to appear, he sprays them individually as he needs to. But if you've ever gone to the hardware store or the garden store to buy weed killer, you know that there are many kinds of weed killers, each oriented to specific types of weeds, such as grassy weeds, broadleaf, and so on. And there's treatments such as Roundup that will kill every bit of vegetation, but that's not a good option if you want to keep the good plants. In fact, that's overkill, except when you just want to clear out all the vegetation. And even that doesn't last forever. So in testing, we need to know the types of defects we most often encounter. We know that defects tend to cluster, and we know that people fall into patterns of repeating mistakes, which is basically why the clustering often occurs. So If we orient our test to find the defects we most commonly encounter, that's a good first pass. Now, in the past, I've called this starting a bug collection. Now I can also call it a weed collection. But then you can drill down as needed, and you can branch out, and you can find new types of defects. So to kind of sum this up, at least for the first part, I'm going to do a part two of this article, and I'll have it on a subsequent podcast. But basically, we can pull the weeds, also known to us as software defects, or we can work on preventing them. Now, pulling weeds is hard work, and it seems to never end. Does that sound familiar with testing? Also, prevention of weeds takes discipline as well, but spraying in advance is easier and cheaper in the long run. Similarly, preventing defects with process improvement and finding those defects early with reviews will pay off in the long run, even though at first it seems like it is taking longer. Now, if you know your source and the types of defects, then you can test wider and then focus on the trouble spots. But just remember that the tests that work well today may not work as well the next time in finding defects. So once again, in the second installment and the continuation of this article and a subsequent podcast, I'm going to talk about why these killer defects are so hard to eradicate and also the results of failing to find and eliminate those defects. Well, I hope this podcast has been helpful. As I said, tune in next time. Hopefully we'll be having some guests here in the future that you'll find interesting. We'll have the second part of this article on killer weeds, and also a new book review that I'm working on right now that I'm very excited about. In fact, working on getting the author as one of our guests, called Making It Big in Software, which is a really neat topic and one that I really like. Once again, don't forget, come by riceconsulting.com for all the things that we're doing. Lots of free resources there. Articles, white papers, videos. Of course, that's where you probably found this podcast. But all kinds of information there. You can check out our e-learning at mysoftwaretesting.com. And of course, like I said, we're all around Facebook, Twitter. R. Rice Tester is my Twitter name there. And on LinkedIn as well. So until next time, thanks a lot, and keep on testing.